Good morning. I call this regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. It's 10 o'clock on Wednesday, July 27th. I'm Commissioner Julie Fedorchak. Also present with me are Commissioner Randy Christman and Sherry Haugen-Hoffert, so we have a quorum. I don't have any opening comments. Randy, do you have any opening comments this morning?
Yes, I do.
Excellent.
So
I cede my time to you.
And I'll take that and maybe a little bit of Sherry's.
Nope.
So, this being my year, my opportunity to be president of the Regional State Council of the Southwest Power Pool, we've been working on a lot of things that really developed during Storm Uri last year and showed the shortcomings of the system. And there's been a lot of accomplishments starting. Some of the first stuff had to do with communications, both internally to the within the organization itself, to the member companies, as well as to the public. But Monday, I think we hit like maybe the single biggest thing in my mind. We did two more measures on Monday. One of them, we adopted a new plan for performance-based accreditation, which will not only look at electric generators' ability to produce, but their record of production as well. And so if somebody's just under maintenance all the time and stuff, we're not going to give them full capacity anymore. But I think the bigger one, it's called the planning reserve margin. And it is just that the utilities within SPP are required to be able to fulfill their full expected summer peak capacity plus 12%. And that seems like it should be plenty, but emergencies come up, and frankly, you can't even really call these emergencies because it's a good part of the summer that we are just on the very, very edge and calling in some very expensive alternative generation day after day to meet that. And so we up that requirement to 15%, right? Mm-hmm. And that will go into effect for the summer of next year of 2023 peak season. And I know that is going to cause some problems for some of the utilities within SPP, that they do not have those kinds of reserves. And acquiring them this quickly is going to be problematic, and it's going to come at a cost. But the fact of the matter is, with the other changes that have been made, and a big part of this is the extent to which we have become reliant on interruptible generation sources. And so you get to some of these hot days, or in the case last year of some really cold days, and if they don't show up to perform, we just do not have the generation that we need. And so this is a cost that is going to have to be borne. But you know, the way we are getting at too much of risk of curtailments to put it off any longer. And really, this will just get the organization back to a similar level of risk as what they've operated on for years. And to me, if anything, we should be finding ways to make the electric grid that has lower levels of risk, because frankly, the extent to which we all rely on electricity in our lives, to me, means that it should be less likely that we have curtailments. And especially when I think of the amount of people that now work from home instead of a large office setting, where in many cases there is backup generation, but now when they're at home, a curtailment means their production stops. That's not good for the economy. It's not good for anyone else. And even more importantly, and now I'm kind of reflecting back to my legislative days, but I've watched it continue since, even at an increasing pace. We have shifted so much health care to home health care instead of institutional settings. All these people that used to be in hospitals or varying levels of nursing long-term care or intermediate care facilities that had backup generation, now these people are living their lives at home with home health care. And there's a whole lot of those people that are vulnerable and can't go long periods of time without air conditioning or heat, or some of them even very short term if they're on oxygen pumps or things like that. And they're no longer in institutions with backup generation. And so I'm really proud of this accomplishment, moving this ball forward to go from the 12% reserve margin to the 15% reserve margin. Frankly, it's been a ton of work putting the votes together on it. And actually, I went into Monday quite confident that I had 7 of the 12 votes. By the way, for anyone who's listening, the SPP footprint states, it doesn't follow state lines, so a lot of these states are in more than one RTO. But we have parts of, start with North Dakota and Minnesota, do a straight line down to Texas and Louisiana, and then add New Mexico. Those are the 12 states. I thought I had 7 and was so glad that I was going to prevail. By the time we were done with a full meeting, much of it on this topic, we got a unanimous vote. And so I'm so pleased that SPP is taking this responsible approach to keep the lights on.
Wow, that is awesome, the unanimous vote. And that's a tribute to your hard work, and I mean, we can't underscore it enough, but it is another example of the value of being involved in these regional organizations, and they take time, and they take you out of state, and it's, you know, it's hard to manage that and the workload here sometimes, but hats off to you, Randy, because I doubt that would happen without your leadership. And so it's a huge deal. And if I might add a couple thoughts, or I have a question first. Does that plan have to be approved by FERC?
Yes.
Okay. But with a unanimous vote, and I don't know, I suppose parties who oppose it could file with FERC, and so there still could be more to come. But
yeah, the people there who deal with FERC seem quite confident that this is not the kind of thing they would reject. They look at this as more of a thing. In fact, in some previous rulings on something from before my time there, they seem to have made it pretty clear that they were, that this was a decision they were leaving to us for the most part. So I'm not looking forward to any problems with FERC on this.
That's good. That's great. MISO has done a similar thing with the seasonal accreditation. And the performance-based accreditation as well. So I think that that's a step in the right direction. And what I wanted to comment on beyond that is, you know, this does point to, again, you mentioned that it might increase costs or that there will be a price tag to this. One of the main reasons why RTOs started was to allow members to share resources and have a lower number of resources themselves. And so they really worked hard to push that reserve margin down over the years because it helped their value go up. And so it helped the value of the RTOs, which they track and use as a selling point for getting new members. It helped them, the value go up. So I think it's, you know, it's natural that this is going to have to occur, especially in this time period where there's a rush to retire thermal units before the technology exists to replace them at the speed that needs to occur, and that's why we're seeing these issues. I did note yesterday, I heard several stories on North Dakota Public Radio, actually, that was talking about, because yesterday or recently MISO's plan for long-range transmission planning was also approved by FERC. It's a $10 billion plan for new transmission projects. And that, you know, will be positive for North Dakota because there's a lot of energy that we produce in the state that can't get out, both renewable and conventional. So it does help both of those issues. And then it also helps, you know, provide more pathways for electricity in general throughout the MISO region. But one of the people quoted in the story, her name is Natalie McIntyre, and I've worked with her a lot. I have a lot of respect for her. She does her homework. She's very well spoken. But I was frustrated with a couple of her comments, and I am going to talk to her about it too. But because she said that this will ultimately help lower costs and make the grid more reliable. And I think both of those are actually not true. It doesn't, most certainly isn't going to lower costs immediately, as we see the need to keep both thermal and these new resources online. There's no way around the fact that customers are going to pay double for the generation, at least in the interim, you know, depending on how long it takes to get batteries that are at commercial scale and economic. But in the interim, this is not going to lower costs, and it's pretty inappropriate, I think, for folks in the know to suggest otherwise. And then we can already see that it's not more reliable. I mean, just having more non-traditional resources that can't be turned up and down to follow the load doesn't create a more reliable grid. It creates one that's more volatile. So those two things, you know, we have to be honest with the public as we go through this transition about what's truly happening and what it's going to cost and what some of the inconveniences are going to be along the way, and we're already seeing those. And so I just wanted to mention that as a follow-up to your comments. And then finally, we will have OMS, the Organization of MISO States, is having a reliability summit the first full week of August. It's August 8th, 9th, 8th and 9th, and 10th. Is that right, Pamela? Okay. And it's in Madison, and it's sold out. So I think the positive news is people are really paying attention to what's happening and concerned about it. I hope that there's a lot of commissioners in attendance from the MISO states. I think that there will be. I'm the liaison on the reliability issues this year, and I, in that role, have helped to plan the summit and get to interview Claire Moeller, who's the head of operations for MISO. And so we get an hour-long session the first day, where we just get to sit down and talk about some of these big issues. And he's the one that coined the term mind the gap. And so we're going to be talking a lot about what that gap is and what we really need to be thinking about. And I hope it'll be a very frank conversation so that state regulators can walk away with a clear understanding of what their role is in all of this. And we can, you know, take measures at the state level to do our best to secure the resources we need to maintain reliability. So with that, Sherry, any opening comments?
Yeah, I do. First of all, Commissioner Chrisman, thank you for your work on that. I know you worked very hard. And Julie, for your additional follow-ups, I think we as a commission really need to be out there and tell our story and what we're seeing and why, and be very open with our people in North Dakota on what is going on and why we see that. And I'm also thankful for the media to help us portray that story, the truth on what's going on reliability and quote-unquote affordability. And so it's very important that maybe we take the time at each commission and really talk about that and really get the message out there, because I think it's very important. So thank you guys for your hard work in MISO and SPP. The other thing I want to mention is this Friday, some of us from the commission will be at the Minot State Fair at the 811 booth, Call Before You Dig. This is a very important program for all of us, because our goal is not to have a catastrophic injury, any type of damage or loss of life. So if you're at the North Dakota State Fair, feel free to stop by our booth, the 811 call before you dig. Staff and myself and maybe another commissioner will be up there. We would love to meet with you, talk to you about activities that are going on, and hope to see you. So that's
very
all I
good.
Have.
Thank you for doing that. And that is a really great time to draw attention to that important issue, and Stacy, do a nice job preparing for that event and working with the other stakeholders. So
yeah,
hope you have a good time. All right, we have a few items on consent in the previous minutes. I move they be approved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Excellent. Thank you, Steve. All right, then moving into the regular agenda. I don't have any items on the regular agenda, so Randy, you're up first.
Okay, I move the commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation in Q-Link Wireless, LLC, designated eligible carrier application, case number PU-22-196.
Second.
First, I'll emphasize Q-Link. It's not Q, like the five-letter word. It's just the letter Q. On May 17th, Q-Link Wireless, which is a Delaware limited liability company and has their principal offices in Florida, filed an application for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier for the purposes of receiving federal universal service support. Q-Link proposes to provide Lifeline universal services to eligible low-income customers as a commercial mobile radio service carrier, LMRS, we call that, throughout every telephone exchange in North Dakota. On June 8th, the commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, providing until July 18th for comments and requests for hearing. None were received. The notice identified the issues to be considered is that, one, is the applicant qualified? Two, what ETC universal service support area should be designated? And number three, is designation of the applicant as an ETC in the public interest? The notice stated that the commission can determine the matter without a formal hearing, but on July 13th, the commission did, in fact, hold an informal hearing to discuss the issues with Q-Link. They were organized and operated in August of 2011, so they've been around a while. They generate revenues from non-Lifeline services, and they have access to capital from investors. And they currently provide services to nearly 770,000 customers. So Q-Link is not solely dependent on reimbursements from the Universal Service Fund, and they are currently authorized as a wireless ETC in over 30 states. They've not been subject to any enforcement action at the FCC or in any of those, I think it's 31 states that they operate in. Q-Link seeks only Lifeline support from the low-income mechanism of the Federal Universal Service Fund. They do not seek support from the high-cost support mechanism that would compete with many of our local carriers. We require a full description of the available services in the ETC's official telephone directory on these things. And since Q-Link is a CMRS provider, it doesn't have an official telephone directory in North Dakota, and so they requested a waiver from this requirement, and this order does, in fact, grant that waiver. Q-Link is requesting ETC designation in all North Dakota telephone exchanges. Staff believes it's in the public interest that Q-Link be designated as a Lifeline-only ETC in all the North Dakota exchanges, and I concur.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And this next one I'm really excited about. I move the commission to adopt the order and notice of violation number 2202 issued to BNI Coal Limited as the at the Center Mine to affirm the violation, assess a civil penalty, and close the case upon payment of the penalty. In BNI Co. Limited, notice of violation 2202, violation RC-22-227.
Second.
To clarify, I'm not excited about doing an NOV ever because we have these great mine companies that get very few. I'm excited about our staff and the quality work they do, and this tells, I think, a pretty amazing story. On May 10th, we did an inspection out at the Center Mine. Upon completion of that inspection, it's not just our people out there looking around and thinking everything is good. There's records kept of exactly where they are when they're out there doing that. So upon review then within the office of that inspection report, it was noted, and I'm going to give credit here since they're in the room, to our director, Zanna Brinkman, but our assistant director, Jonathan Emmer, I believe is who actually caught this, that overburden removal was inspected in the field, and that some of this came off of some land that is above federal coal without a mine plan approval from the Department of Interior. So on May 18th, they sent the inspectors back out there to do an in-person inspection, confirmed that. So on May 25th, this NOV was issued. It's estimated that 275,000 cubic yards of overburden were removed over federal coal in this area to facilitate the mining of privately owned coal in contiguous property. I just so appreciate the thoroughness of our team to have caught that, because we're not, they didn't go like take overburden off of a whole quarter of land. It was, probably 8 acres or less that they just got over a little too far. And they caught that out in the middle of area where the topsoil's removed and much, the other land around it's in mining. I'm amazed. So BNI has obtained a BNI has obtained a federal coal lease that includes this tract, and they plan to mine the federal coal once they receive mine plan approval from the U.S. Department of Interior. Now, upon just listening to that sentence, it's that they've got it and they're going to remove it once they get the federal approval. And I want to point that out because it's what we hear a lot regarding oil development in America these days, where one side is saying the federal government is holding up drilling, and the president and his administration are saying, well, we've got all these permits out there. They're not drilling on it. Well, here's the example, though slightly different terminology is used in coal mining than oil. In this case, BNI has obtained the federal coal lease. They didn't have the mine plan approval. And so, yes, you could say they had a lease, but they couldn't do the overburden removal until they had the mine plan approval. So when we issued the mine permit from North Dakota, a special condition was added to the permit that states, quote, no overburden or coal removal may occur on federal coal tracts until the mine plan for the federal coal is approved, unquote. So overburden can be removed over federal coal without mine plan approval if the mine submits a request to our North Dakota Reclamation Division, and then we obtain concurrence from the BLM and the Bureau of Land Management. BNI Coal, the mine company, did not submit a request or have concurrence at the time when this overburden was removed. BNI is familiar with the process of obtaining concurrence. On March 25th, they submitted a request to us for concurrence in a different permit area to remove overburden above federal coal where the mine plan had not been approved. So they do know the process. To assess a civil penalty, the commission considers four factors. One is the history of previous violations. Two is the seriousness. Three is negligence, and four is good faith in attempting to achieve compliance. So I'll go through those. Number one, We can assess a civil penalty of up to $3,500 per day based on the history of previous violations and based on the criteria we've used in the past. BNI does not have a history of violations. They are a good company. Number two, the commission may assess a civil penalty of up to $3,500 per day based on the seriousness of the violation. Well, in this case, approximately 275,000 cubic yards of overburden were removed, so a $2,000 penalty based on the seriousness is warranted. We can assess a civil penalty of up to $3,000 per day based on the degree of fault of the permittee. Well, the NOV was caused by reckless and knowing conduct, since BNI is familiar with the process. They've just done one in another permit area. So a $3,000 penalty based on the negligence due to lack of diligence is warranted. And number four, we can deduct up to $1,000 per day from the civil penalty when a permittee takes extraordinary measures to abate the violation. No deduction for good faith is warranted here. There's really nothing extraordinary. So Reclamation Division recommends that the commission assess a civil penalty in the amount of $5,000. Again, that's $2,000 for seriousness, $3,000 for negligence. I concur with that recommendation and add that BNI did not request an informal conference or formal hearing regarding this NOV.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Randy, I concur with your applaud to the staff. Great job on this. It's really amazing work, especially in lieu of the fact that we've had such high turnover in, you know, replacement of our staff, which is another story idea for you sometime, Dave. We have 80% new staff since 2019 in this agency. And these folks are filling very technical roles from people previously held for, you know, 20 to 40 years plus. So the fact that you guys are doing that, not skipping a beat, is just really a testament to what great people we've hired recently and what an awesome team we have at the commission. So thank you guys for your dedication. I have a question. How long has BNI been waiting for approval on their federal plan? Do you know? It feels like this is one that we hear about a lot on our quarterly meetings with industry, but do you know offhand how long they've been waiting for word from the feds on this?
Well, you know, this is multiple permit areas, and between the leases and the mine plan approvals, yes, there's been some long delays. I don't know if this specific area, I don't know.
Since 2011. See, now, I'm not saying that excuses their work or what they did here, and I'm sure it was a mistake, obviously, and not intentional. But come on, 2011? That's going, we're coming up on 12 years for approval, regulatory approval. What company can operate efficiently and economically with federal regulations and oversight that is that negligent? I mean, that is just horrific. And it's an example, like you said, of the doublespeak that is going on with this administration on energy issues. They want to say that they're doing their best for the American people. Meanwhile, behind the closed doors, behind all the terms that the average citizen can't understand, they're dragging their feet every chance they get. And as a result, there's coal shortages nationwide. There's high oil and gas prices. And they're turning around with a straight face and blaming the companies for this. It's absolutely outrageous. And citizens should be really up in arms about this kind of stuff. So anyway, that is just a tough way to operate for BNI.
It is a good point. And I will add, though, you know, you mentioned this administration. Since 2000, that's three different presidents.
True.
That, you know, should have been getting this done. And I want to add, you know, when you talk about, you know, the shortages of coal at times and such, BNI doesn't really export any, so maybe that's not a factor here. But the fact of the matter is, the other land where they were really mining and where they got too close here and got over the line, there's some mineral owners there that want to be paid for every ton that they can get out of it. So they want them to be cutting it close. And when I said, you know, maybe up to 8 acres, it's a skinny little line right along the edge of between these two sections of land. And so they just got over a little bit too far, but it's still a violation. It's important that we follow up appropriately because it's important that North Dakota keep this mine reclamation program. And so we have to follow the federal rules too, and that means not allowing them to fudge over there, and they got too close. But the fact of the matter, yeah, they were just trying to get all the coal they could out of the stuff they're supposed to be mining.
I just have a comment and then just one follow-up question. Again, kudos. I agree the staff did a remarkable job, so I want to thank you for catching that. With this plan submitted back in 2011 and that still hasn't been approved, as time marches on, does BNI end up, is there a need for them to submit an addendum to that plan because of that time? Or, I mean, it just seems like it could be a vicious cycle, you know, their work plan. I'm just curious. Do they end up submitting an amendment to their plan?
Zana, you should probably take a mic.
Zana, do you want to go up to the mic? I think it's just good for the public to know.
Yes. So. They started the process of applying for the federal lease in 2011. And they obtained the lease just a couple years ago. And then the mine plan approval, going through NEPA with OSM and BLM, kicks in. And that's what we're waiting on now, to go for mine plan approval to the Department of the Interior. So it's a multi-step process that's been long.
Been delayed.
Yeah. Well, can create additional work, too, for BNI, too.
But to answer your question, yes, they have had to update for threatened and endangered species and other things that have changed in the last 11 years.
Okay. Thank you.
The other, you mentioned that BNI doesn't export, but the same process is happening all over the country for coal mining on federal lands. And so, you know, in places where they do export to facilities, this is part of the problem for getting the coal out there. So, and that's going to be an issue this winter. We're already hearing it, especially in the East Coast. There's just not enough coal, and the generating units are trying to reserve what they have for the winter season, even though it's needed for the summer cooling, too. Anyway, okay.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Oh, that does conclude your portfolio. Okay, you're up, Sherry.
I move the commission reduce the application fee to $10,000 and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Northern States Power Company 2021 Purchase Power Agreement Cost Compliance Case Number PU22-311.
Second.
On July 8, 2022, Northern States Power Company filed a compliance filing of the Comprehensive Settlement Agreement, in which requires NSP to provide an annual list of new purchase power agreements less than 50 megawatts in size that have been included in NSP's fuel cost recovery rider during the previous year. The issues to consider are the purchase power agreements' least cost resources, and is there any other relevant information the commission should consider? Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments are and requests for hearing must be received by September 9th, 2022. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
No one seconded.
Oh.
Oh, second.
Sorry about that.
We're off today.
What? It was, you were so excited about the last one.
Now we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Ready, Randy? Yes. I move the commission suspend the tariff and rate, reduce the application fee to $10,000, and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Otter Tail Power Company Advanced Grid Infrastructure Cost Recovery Rider Tariff and Rates, case number PU22-312.
Second.
On July 8th, 2022, Otter Tail Power Company filed an application of eligibility determination and approval to implement an advanced grid infrastructure cost recovery rider. They propose to recover approximately $3,062,505 during the recovery period of January 1, 2023 through December 31st, 2023. The proposed rate would be charged monthly on a per meter basis, varying from $1.71 for a residential meter to $71.76 for a large general service transmission meter. The issues at this proceeding are the proposed tariffs revised just and reasonable? Do they comply with the tariff? And are the proposed rates just and reasonable? Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by September 9th, 2022. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I will just say in advance, just in case, you know, oftentimes these come through and no one comments or requests a hearing. On this one, I will want at least an informal. So.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay.
That ends my portfolio.
Thank you, Sherry. Let's see. All right, we just have a few announcements, and then we'll get into questions. All right. Tomorrow we have some events planned at NSP Natural Gas Rate Case. Work session that we may be adjusting the time for that, just an FYI. And then there's also some other work sessions, this Badger Wind work session that's scheduled for next week. I think we're going to talk about that and scheduling as well. We might put that off because they've asked for an extension. We've got some additional cybersecurity reports that we're hearing in August, and the Bowman Wind facility siting application, which we heard, I forget the date of that, but it was last year, I think. We will be working on a work session for that one as well, because I think the company has all of its items in place that we were waiting on for that. So, and then in late August or August 23rd, I will call to attention the RTO updates from MISO and SPP. We'll be having a full day pretty much scheduled for those discussions, and that will no doubt be really an interesting agenda, so folks can tune in for that. All right. With that, we'll now take a brief recess to take questions from the press, followed by short break if we desire. This meeting is in recess.